You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Pop a top again.
When you hear that, the sound of the beer crack, and you know who's cracking in after that. That is...
The big beer drinker.
the big R beer man. Mr. Beer himself, Michael Musselman. What's up, beer boy?
God, I can't even tell you how long it's been since I had a beer. Like, years. And people look at me weird when I say I don't like to taste beer. They're like, what? I just don't like beer.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, yeah. You know, the only thing I'll drink beer with that I think beer tastes good with is Chinese food. And I don't know why, but I think it tastes good.
Really?
Other than that, but I rarely drink it because I don't have it in the house. You know, so
yeah.
I mean,
my wife drinks it.
Yeah. So, oh, really? So we don't have it in the house. So if like there's beer in the refrigerator, you know, my kids are like, "Why is there beer in the refrigerator? Somebody's got an issue?" Like, no, so and so came by. They drank too. There's some left. It's in there. Do you want some? Oh, okay. Just a second. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, beer. No, not so much. And so.
I know a lot of people like beer at pizza.
Oh, my God. I have friends who are like, oh, I'll have a Pilsner Essence Fruitcake Pine Needles. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Really, dude?
I'll have a pine nut beer.
Yeah.
Brewed in a bathtub.
Yeah. Should we go get your massage there, Pumpkin? And I love it when Marines do that crap. Yeah.
So I don't get it.
They love it. I mean, it's like, it's a beer thing. So, whatever. Have you ever been to Whataburger in Texas?
What? How can you ask me that question?
Yeah, is that a yes?
Absolutely, yeah.
How would you compare Whataburger to In-N-Out?
Oh, Whataburger's a lot better. Yeah.
So there's a shocker.
Gotta say it slow though. What a burger.
Is that how they say it?
Well, no, they say what a burger, but it's what a burger.
If you're gonna speak Texas, it's like.
Well, that's what you when you first eat it, you feel like your mind's like. You take your first bite and you're like, what a burger.
Do you actually think that, or are you too hungry? What is your favorite form of fast food?
If I had to choose fast food.
If you had to choose fast food, what would you choose? I think, honestly, in my house, and me included, I would say Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, that's a big one out here, too.
Yeah, I'd say Chick-fil-A is my, because they have a great Southwest chicken salad, and they give you enough salad dressing. They have, their fruit is all good. They're closed on Sunday. I like that. And they have, bar none, the best soft serve ice cream in the world. I used to like McDonald's.
Yeah, you say that.
Yeah, I used to like McDonald's. I mean, it makes McDonald's look like something your mother made in the gutter. Yeah, like that. So yeah, Chick-fil-A. So what is yours?
Yeah, Chick-fil-A.
You can't pick mine. You have to pick a different one.
Okay, I can't pick Chick-fil-A.
No, you can't pick Chick-fil-A. That's mine.
You got dibs. You got dibs on it.
I got dibs on it. You know, hey, you know the rules. If somebody has dibs on it.
Yeah, you got dibs.
Yeah, so you got it.
Then I think my choice would be Arby's.
What?
Yeah. I'm one of those guys.
What do you get at Arby's?
I just get the standard, roast beef sandwich, medium, nothing. But then I get the horsey and the Arby's sauce on it.
Yeah, you can't.
Horsey sauce.
Yeah. Mm. You know what? I might have to go try that someday because – I wouldn't go necessarily for the sandwich, but I would go for the sauce. The sauce would make me go eat the sandwich because I'm like you.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think if you put Arby and horsey stuff on anything, I'd eat it.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, and, you know, the chef does, you know, he does like horseradish sauce and sour cream, and he does a few things for steak that are muy delicioso. In fact, every time Patrick eats steak, he makes his own little concoction with horseradish sauce and sour cream.
Horseradish sour cream. That's good on chicken, actually, too. For, like, chicken tenders, try horseradish sauce and sour cream. It's pretty damn good.
What Here's an email. Hey, Mac. Gunner spent a lot of time in California. Is he a wiener schnitzel guy?
No.
Only when you're drunk?
No.
Not even when you're drunk? Two in the morning, you're looking for something to eat. Wiener schnitzel tend to be open.
No.
Don't want to make yourself sicker?
Okay. Yeah, if back in those days when I'd do Denny's.
Denny's.
We always had breakfast at Denny's.
Yeah, there you go.
I would say come back from like 2 in the morning from out in the club, so you're like stuck at Denny's.
And then the other one in Los Angeles that was famous for being open all night was Tommy's. And they had these big hamburgers and they dumped chili on them and stuff.
They got one in Costa Mesa.
Do they? Tommy's?
Yeah. Over by the airport.
I'd have to go looking for it. Let me look.
It's on the other side. It may not be Costa Mesa.
Oh, well, it's odd because you said Costa Mesa.
Yeah, but I think it's like one of those. It's like on the border of the. I'm trying to think how do you get there. You got to go through Santa Ana, go past the mall. It's on the other side of the freeway. So Costa Mesa is on the. If you're going towards like Long Beach, Costa Mesa is on the left side of the freeway.
That would be known as West in military terms, but correct.
Yeah, and then. This is on the right side of the freeway. It's down past. It's like, you know where IKEA is at right off the freeway? What is that, the 405?
Yeah.
It's behind IKEA in that little.
So it's on the left-hand side of the freeway? As you go past Costa Mesa, you keep going, it's on the left-hand side by IKEA?
It's on the right side. IKEA's on the right side.
Well, you're actually wrong. You are correct. There is one there. But it's on the left-hand side.
Oh, maybe it is on the left-hand side.
You probably turned around. TBI.
It's by, you know, like there's that big church that everybody wonders who goes there?
No.
You've seen it.
There's a
church. It's got like a gold lions out front.
That's in Costa Mesa.
Yeah, it's like around there.
No, it's not. That's Harbor. This is up near Warner, which is about, I don't know, 5 miles away.
What's 5 miles?
Oh, well, drop a bomb and I'll tell you.
What if it's a thermonuclear bomb? And 5 miles doesn't mean anything, does it?
It's not that far. But don't play the thermonuclear bomb on me, okay?
Okay.
Since nobody's fired one in a while, we're not going out.
Yeah, we don't say, like, horseshoes and hand grenades and thermonuclear bombs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey,
what?
I was watching a show last night that pissed me off all royally again.
Why do you normally don't watch? You don't normally do stupid stuff like that.
I know, but it was dealing with the guys in blue, and it was that whole language of losers again. You know, they speak that language of losers. These guys did anyway. Of, you know, the first thing that ran through my mind was I'm gonna die. You know, and you're like, oh, for crying out loud. Really, that was the very first thing when you saw the gun. In the guy with the gun in the car, the first thing on your mind was, this is the day I'm going to die? Go find a new line of it. Go find a different job. You know, like, what in the world? It should be like, how dare you pull a gun on me? Today is the day you're going to die. Not the other way around.
Yeah, what has to happen for that? What has to happen?
It's a defeatist mentality that, either they're taught. So it goes back to we had a discussion. You know, is it nature or nurture? How do they're not born with that, are they?
You know, interestingly enough, I was thinking about this for some reason this morning. Why was I thinking about it? I don't know why I was thinking about it. Nature or nurture, but. You know, kids, this is my opinion, of course, and I have four kids. Kids are, they're blank canvases. Now, I will grant you that on occasion, very rarely, they have, I don't know, an extra chromosome, and even the best parents can't get through to somebody. But my experience for 99% of kids is that if you give them structure, if you hold them accountable, if you teach them, guess what happens? oh my God, they'll do the right thing. And when you see bad kids, 99% of the time, it's because they have bad parents.
Right. And so this goes back to kind of what we used to talk. What we were talking about was how we deal. How society today teaches our kids to deal with adversity.
They don't though.
There's no thought.
It's like your feelings. How did that make
you? You fall down. What do? You blame the shit you tripped over.
Yeah.
Blame the ground for being so hard. Blame gravity for pushing you to the ground. But never take responsibility of I wasn't paying attention. No. It's always someone else's fault.
What has to happen, Mike, for that to turn around? At what point does our education system see that, look, you know, all the whole Ritalin thing that we did to kids, that was, all of a sudden, all these kids are ADHD. You know what they were? They had not been told the meaning of no, and then they couldn't be controlled, and then we medicated them. That's fucking gross, man. And then
we're still doing it.
And so, but you know, so you got it, and then, because what happens is you tell them no, they've never been told in their life. No doesn't mean no to me. So.
Well, see, life doesn't take in consideration your feelings when it hands you, a bad situation.
Your shit burger. Yeah. Here you go, Mac. Have another one.
Yeah. You enjoyed the first one?
I didn't enjoy the meal. Like, what did Joe Finesse's wife has on the sign she has on the refrigerator? God doesn't give you more than you can handle?
Yeah.
I just wish you didn't have so much.
You wouldn't have so much trust in me.
Confidence in me.
Yeah, trust your confidence.
Enough. Okay. Enough already. Hello. But you know what, Mike? It's the single most important skill of life is overcoming adversity, because once you learn that you can do it, then
anything is possible.
You can do it.
But see, we teach our, we talk to our kids like that. We speak like that. Oh, like, you poor thing. You can do this.
Well, yeah, exactly. You're going to do this.
You know, it's like I said, my daughter, for the longest time, probably thought I was the shittiest parent in the world. Because she'd come home and be like, Dad, I got a B in my chemistry class. And I'd be like, a B? Hey, okay. And so she'd look at me, and I said, what are you waiting for? A good job? And she'd look at me like that puzzled. And I said, no, a B is good, but an A is better.
Right. Is that as good as you can do?
You did your best? Well, no, Dad. But geez, Dad, I'm just trying to, and I said, I got it. Okay, I got it. I still love you.
But
that doesn't go away ever.
But
the fact is, you could have done better. And she now gets it. I mean, she gets it like there's no tomorrow, man. She's like all over that shit.
She knows your line before you even say them. Don't say it. I'm ready for it.
Yeah. But she gets it quick.
But again, once you do it, honestly, as a parent, when they learn that hard work overcomes adversity, that it not only can it get worse, right? You know, it will get worse. You think it's bad? It'll get worse. I told some stories this morning. Yeah, you thought it was bad, and it got worse.
Yeah,
it got fucking worse. You know, and so. You know, Mike, I don't know if you were listening, but I told a story about, taking John and Patrick were 10, 7 and 10. We were in Sacramento, and Patrick said, could we go to the cemetery and see Tori and Tyler's, graves? And I said, yeah, they're cousins that were murdered. And so we go out there, right? And, okay, got to be tough today. That doesn't work, right? So you're watching your kids trying to make sense of it. And we had to tell them what happened because my dad was managing the Angels and it was on ESPN. So we had to tell them what happened so nobody else would tell them something that they hadn't heard from us first. So it was shitty. And so we go to the cemetery and we're walking back to the car, and Patrick and my dad are walking in front of me, John and I behind, and John looks at me and says, do you think it hurt? Right? So you talk about what happened, and then like other shit happened after that that made it worse. Like, oh, the story's not over. So, I mean, if you're not ready, if you don't think life can do that to you, first of all, I want to be you. Second of all, I mean, it will. So you better be tough. Life is not for pussies, man. It's not for pussies. So, got to fight. Got to be a fighter.
Yeah, and that's you know, and again,
you're
know,
so,
and I
you're
tell
so
people
mean.
All the time.
You're so hard on everybody. You're so
well,
mean.
Well, no, I look at them and say, listen, I get it. It's not fair, all right? Do you want to stay in this loop? Do you want to stay in the loop of, it's not fair, life's not fair, I'm mad. Okay, we're done with this, right? Are we done being mad? No, you still want to be mad? Okay, let's still be mad. Tell me when we can step out of this. I'll stay here with you, but we're not going anywhere. Why are you such an ass? I'm not an ass. How am I being an ass? I'm being truthful. I don't want you to sit here and let's throw the pity party. You know, no one's coming to your pity party, ever. People. And if people do come to your pity party, they're not your friends.
Yeah, they're losers.
Yeah. If people show up at your pity party, those are not your friends. Ditch them. They're losers. Okay? You don't want losers in your life, because if you have losers in your life, guess how it makes you?
Wait, hold on. Let me quote the inside Jew. You are the average of the 3 to 5 people that you spend the most time with. You are the average. He always says it twice. You are the average of the 3 to 5 people that you spend the most time with. That's the inside you.
And you have,
doctor,
yeah.
doctor.
If you have 3 friends show up at your pity party, sorry to say it, but
you're the loser. Average of those 3 losers. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So anyway. All right.
Yeah, well, I don't want friends that tell me, oh, you poor thing. Oh, it's going to be okay. Now, I want friends that look at me and go, all right, you done fucking crying there, sweetheart? Okay. And those are the friends I have. And it's not, doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good all the time. You know, it hurts. But you know what? They're right. And you're like, you get a little mad at them. You're like, whatever. But then they're right. You know they're right. And then you're like, okay.
The meter of the event is you get mad at them, right? Everybody gets everybody kind of gets silent for a little while, and then life goes on, and you get over it.
Right.
And
they're like, hey, you guys still hungry? Let's go in there now.
All right. And you know, and they're good enough that they do the same thing. They're not gonna make a big deal, because let me tell you, if you're gonna be friends for a long time, you're gonna disagree over some stuff. The key is to get over it. You're friends for a reason, and you know, I mean, all the stuff that we've all done together is why we're friends. Let me tell you, one of the coolest parts of last week was, you know, doing it with guys that you've known for so long and been through so much with. And now you're doing something else with them that's really cool, but you have this past with them where you did a lot of other stuff. And it's just that closeness with the different friends we have is pretty cool, pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's it is cool.
That's, you know, the other thing is, you know, Mike talks about, you know, being part of a tribe, and he gives an example of, you know, somebody who, you know, lost their way and fell away from, you know, his tribe and started hanging out with idiots, and where that took his life. And I think that that's a pretty powerful story about the you know. You have to know what's important in your life, and you have to nurture it. You have to make sure you retain it in your life, because you really need it when your life gets difficult.
Yeah, it was the number one cause of his death. Guaranteed. You know, if he would have stayed connected with the guys that cared about him, his buddies, his Marines, that would have never happened. You know, and and it's sad because I hear it all the time. I see it in the news. You know, this guy commits suicide. That person does this. This person does that. And, you know, and for a long time, I always thought suicide was related. There was like an idolization. You idolized people that committed suicide. And then I thought of, you know, and then I was thinking about it this week too. And I'm like, how stupid of a thought is that? Because then people do believe that. Like, if a famous person commits suicide, then other people will commit suicide. No.
You don't think that there's among people. Well, I mean, you told us.
Well, the difference is because they're friends, they're tribe. they're associating with people like that person that did it, and they believe in their mind, well, shit, if that person can, you know, it's that bad for that guy. And we don't understand, you know, and that guy's stronger, way stronger than me. The problem is we live in this fantasy world of, you know, we're picking the wrong mentors or heroes, wrong choices. Celebrities should never be in your top anything for people you look up to.
Who do you look up to?
I look up to people that deal with these kind of issues and move on. Like,
name one.
Shit. I look up to, you know, like I said, I look up to you. I look up to Josh. I look up to Athena. I look up to Elizabeth Smart.
I watched her. I want to meet Elizabeth Smart. If you ask me.
Oh, my God. I want to meet her so bad. She's like my number one.
Who's the number one person you want to meet, Mac? I would say right now, Elizabeth Smart. I watched her movie day before yesterday. I watched a couple other things she's done. And, what an unbelievable story. And, I mean, for what we talk about the exact same thing she does because she talks about trauma. And it doesn't need to ruin your life. And she talked about, you know, it's really interesting. I heard her talking about what her mom said to her, after they got home the day that she, you know, the police found her. And she said, you know, she said, my mom is such a great woman and I try so hard to live up to, you know, what she tells me. She said, I don't often live up to that, but I try hard. And she said that day, when we went home, we talked, and she said, you know, Elizabeth, you have to find a way in your heart to let go of this. And I know it's going to be hard because the way that they win is that this grips your life in a negative way for the rest of your life. The way you defeat them is you live a happy life. And so that's what I want you to learn to do, and your father and I will support you in any way that you need it. But you're going to win because you're going to live a happy life. And it was very, very cool. And she said, and my mom was absolutely right. Right?
Yeah, she's raised by good people.
Yeah. And so, but she's, man, I watched her. I watched her speak. And then she wrote a book.
You know, she wrote a bunch of books. I have her one book, My Story.
Yeah, that one. I started being interviewed by Anderson Cooper, and he actually asked a pretty good question. He said, you've written in a lot of detail in the book about, you know, how they kept you physically, about being raped. And then he said, why? She said, well, I thought a lot about that, you know, and I didn't want to write a book and not address the issues that are clearly resonant in what happened, kind of not really put frosting on the story. I didn't want to do that. I wanted, and Mike, you'll love this. She said, words to the effect, by bearing my soul, the thing that I have found is that other people have reached out to me all over the world who read my story and have had similar experiences. And I'm so glad that I did it. And before I even wrote the book, I knew it would happen because when I would go speak and talk about those things, the response was overwhelming. People coming out of the woods. And I could then touch their lives by saying, you're going to be okay. It's okay. And it's the same message that we talk about. And so she just, to me, to have that happen at the age of 14, what an incredible woman. So, yeah, she's number one on my list.
She's going to be in Fort Worth in February, and I'm going to try.
Really?
Yeah, she's going to be doing, it's called Unbound. It's a luncheon with Elizabeth Smart.
Get out.
It's a fundraiser.
Who's the fundraiser for?
Human trafficking.
Oh, you know what? You read about that and you're first like, well, there can't be that much of that going on. And then you start reading about it. Good God, man. It's
so I'm going to try and be there for this. I'm going to try and get tickets to go to this luncheon. And then, you know, see if I can talk to her. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'll be easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Gunner, man. She probably heard of me. She's probably thinking right now in Scotland, like,
maybe
who's the one person that you'd like to meet?
Maybe if I go there, maybe he'll show up.
Because he lives in Texas, I last saw her.
She does a fair amount of speaking. Unbound, Fort Worth, Thursday, February 28th.
Yeah.
Davis House. I don't know where Davis House is. University of Regina. Wow.
Yeah. She does a lot.
An evening with Elizabeth Smart, Rialto. That's up in the Bay Area, isn't it, Rialto?
Yeah, Rialto.
Wow. Wow. Good for her. No, so, yeah, she'd be number one on my list. Who would be number two?
He's dead.
Who?
But.
Who?
Shackleton. I would love to sit with
Shackleton. Oh. That is a cool story.
But they're very similar in a way because adversity, that's, you know, and it took me a while to think about that. Like, you know, when I talked to Athena one time, I told her, I said, you're no different than those type of people that wrote these books on, but that's a different type of adversity, right. You know, environmental peril and that kind of thing. But it's the same. It's more of a physical peril that they dealt with, along with mental, don't get me wrong, where most, like Elizabeth dealt with more mental, and there was some physical, but they're very similar people. So, you know, they faced adversity in extreme cases and then overcame and went, and not only win, they shattered it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
It is amazing. And that's why, you know, the one skill you would think, you know, in a school, it's like, okay, we have to teach overcoming adversity. That's why we can't be afraid, right, to give failing grades to people. Right? Because the skill is, the single life skill that you have to learn is how to get up off the floor and how to work harder and then go master it, go get after it. And if you don't allow them to experience that, then you get what I think, you know, the whole snowflake thing and they can't handle adversity and all the rest of that stuff. Because let me tell you, everybody may not know this, but life can be adverse at times. Hello? And if you're not equipped to it, right, that's when you're overwhelmed and incapacitated by something that's part of everyday life. So it's no bueno, man. Don't shield them. Let them experience it. Let them taste it. Let them taste it. Let them get after it. So and the cool part is to watch them see that they could do it and see the light flicker on. I'm almost done because the light went on and he just did it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool. Pretty cool. Here's another email. I know you two have heard this before, but I think it's so cool that guys with your experiences in life really look up to a woman who showed courage in something completely other than your own. Just wanted to say that. I know you've heard it before. But I appreciate it every time you guys speak like this. It makes me think you are not the knuckle-dragging ass clowns that others accuse you of being. Have a great weekend. I think that's a compliment, yes?
I could hear a hint of a compliment in there somehow.
There was a compliment. Now, you know, people are actually surprised. I mean, when we do the post-traumatic reading thing, I mean, I think... especially the spouses were blown away when we start using non-military females as examples of courage. And they're like, all right, what's going on here? Is there a hidden camera? What's going on here? Who are these guys? And so, but it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. Here's another email. I have a gun question about reduced loads for female ammunition. Is that stuff available in most gun stores? Is it something that you have to mail order?
Yes. So it's not going to say reduced loads.
What's it going to say?
It's like either like subsonic or maybe it does say reduced loads. So I've just never seen it. Reduced ammo loads. For what kind of handgun has it got? You know?
They don't say.
So what you're looking at is, so I'm going to pull up right now for 38 special. Reduced recoil handgun ammo. You know, so, yeah, it actually would say it. Wow, okay. It's going to either, like, call defense light ammo, soft recoil ammo. I'm looking at all these boxes. Reduced 38 loads. You know, so what you're looking at, and a lot of stores are not going to carry it. Little small stores, Cabela's. If you live in a state where you can actually get it delivered, then you can order it online. But it's either going to be like subsonic, you know, anything where, if you look at the standard feet per second of a bullet, let's say it's 1400 feet per second for a 9mm, you want, and you're buying stuff that's like 900 feet per second. Yeah, that's going to be considerably a reduced load.
I would say just go to the counter and tell them what you're looking for. Ask somebody. I know. Nobody likes
that. Yeah, you better be careful, because then you're going to get the, what do you need a reduced load for? Because I fucking asked you. That's why I'm the customer. Just get it for me.
Whoa.
Don't ask me questions.
Sounds like you have an anger issue.
No, only for stupidity.
No, only for stupidity. So that's actually a yes.
Did I say yes?
I think you did say yes, technically. You said no, but you were saying yes, I think. Reduce loads. I do think, you know, that's one of the things I've discovered when I can't remember how that came up recently. Oh, you know, I think you went to shoot with Annabelle.
Yeah.
And I think the subject came up of fitting handguns to women, and you're talking about, you know, grips that are appropriate. You were talking, you know, that feel comfortable in the hand. And the other thing you said was, you know, just as important is finding ammunition that doesn't intimidate them from pulling the trigger. Not, you know, if that makes sense, but, you know, you want wincing and because you know this thing's going to kick and, you know, it screws up everything you're doing. So, and you made the point that, look, it's still going to go through somebody. Okay. So make no mistake about that. So anyway, I thought it was pretty interesting. I never really considered reduced load ammunition and its appropriateness for female shooters. So made me smart about that. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm texting, Elizabeth Smart right now. See if she replies to me.
Do you? Tell her I said hi. Tell her Max says hey too.
Yeah.
I want her to come on All Marine Radio. I sent a message to her foundation. I also saw something that said she's living in Utah now, not Scotland.
Hmm.
Yeah. I like that.
That's pretty cool. That'd be cool if she was.
Well, I don't know how she could do all this traveling and commute from Scotland, so I would think that she would be living here in the United States someplace. I mean, if you look at her schedule, I mean, she's out and about doing her thing. So it would be hard to do from Scotland, but could be done. Could be done. I think her husband, right, is certainly Scottish.
Yeah, so, he's a Scot.
He's a Scot. Next, another email today. I have a gun question. What is the best way to ship guns? And could the gunner talk about guns on airplanes? What kind of ass pain do you go through to have a weapon checked into a suitcase? Yeah, Mike, you travel.
There is no, I don't know why people have such an ass pain with shit, I don't know, with guns. Yeah. I never do. So, depending on, like I tell people, call your carrier, American Airlines, Delta, whatever you're flying on, and look at the rules. And normally the rules are, one, you can't have any ammunition whatsoever, you know, in your luggage. You can't even bring that on the plane, not even check bag. Make sure that there's no ammunition, not even a spent cartridge, anywhere in the case of the gun, because you're dealing with people that don't know guns. So they're going to see a spent cartridge, and they're going to hit the panic button. And what I do is I go the extra measure. So I actually lock. I have the little lock that goes through the handgun. Lock that, and then put that in a locked case. And so it can't. The case has got to be an actual, an approved case by TSA. Just can't be like a Tupperware dish with a lock on.
Got it.
And then you go there, you declare to the agent at the desk that you have a handgun. What they will do is they will inspect it. They open it up. You don't keep it locked. You open it up. They check it. They put a little tag inside and they put a tag on the outside. Then you lock it on the outside. And that's it.
That's it.
Yeah. And so, when I travel, I use a Pelican case.
Yeah.
For a handgun. And it doesn't have gun stickers all over it either. Cause I don't want people losing their shit, you know?
Like, what do you mean gun stickers?
I've seen people travel and they have like a gun case and it's got like Glock and Winchester and Remington and all these ammo stickers all over the thing. And it's like, hello.
You want them to think that it might be like a microphone or a...
Or put band stickers on it.
Or a drug...
Make it like an instrument, like a guitar or oboe.
An oboe.
Yeah. I actually have a gun case for my M4 when it breaks down. That it is actually like an oboe case. It looks just like a clarinet or an oboe case. It's really small.
Did you buy it like that? Was it?
Yeah, I had it. The guy, a buddy of mine, was making those that made them look just like band instruments.
No, I mean, and really... You're not doing it to go Al Capone on somebody's ass, right?
I just don't want people losing their shit when they see me walk around. They're like, oh, that guy plays in the band.
Yeah, you don't want him – you don't want them messing with your shit either. So,
no.
You know, and I'll tell you, every time I travel with my – all the stuff that I have to take when I do the show someplace, they rip my shit apart. They see all the cords. They see, you know, different things in there and – wires and whatnot. They're like, you know, what is this? But normally they're pretty tidy about it, right? They haven't like demolished my stuff yet, which would irritate me, but guns. All right. The, here's another email. Can we go back to condiments, please? I couldn't get to write this last hour when you were talking about it. That is one of the things that absolutely positively infuriates me when I'm out, whether I'm alone or with friends or when I'm with my family. They give you food and they skimp on the condiments. Who the hell thinks it's a good idea? All it does is it makes your customers angry. Why? So you can save 2 cents on your salad dressing? You are stupid, my friends, and I hate places like that. Just wanted to get this off my chest. And Mac, please don't read this sometimes the way you do, like I'm stupid or crazy. Come on. Why are you hating all of a sudden? Come on. I'm with you, man. I don't like when they do that. I think that's wrong. The tyranny of condiments, man. Give me what I want. Could I have some ketchup? How many would you like? Like enough to eat my French fries that you just gave me there, killer?
You know what I hate? I hate places that have shaved ice in their sodas, and they fill your cup all the way up with ice, and they say, there's no difference. It's the same amount of soda. And you're like, idiot, it's called displacement. It's a scientific – you can prove this scientifically.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
No, I'll show you. Come on. I'm going to take you back, and I'm going to dunk your head in the toilet, and then you're gonna live
with
water.
Yeah, see how much water displaces when I do this.
That you're going to have to clean up after I prove my point to you. What? Yeah. You heard me. Come here. Yeah. What do you think? All right, so what do you have planned for the weekend? Anything? Relaxing?
Yeah. Well, no. I got some shit going on. I just don't remember now.
How about the land navigation?
I wrote it down, but I forgot where I put it.
Where are you going to – when are you going to do the land nav course?
I think we're done with that. I don't know what we're going to be talking about. I forgot. I have it written down. I have all this written down. I got to start writing it down on my phone.
Yeah, that helps me. I have, you know, a note 8, right? So you have a pen. I like that. And I know the chef just told me his you know, will work with his finger. But, you know, because in teaching, you know, the last couple of weeks, you have, like, you'll be listening to Mike talk, and then he'll say something, and it'll jog your memory, and you'll think of something, and then you don't write it down, and you're like, oh, why did I write that down? So I've kind of taken to that, getting my little pen out and write myself a note, and I like that. I like that. It makes me more thorough, which sometimes I am not, because I don't write things up. So, anyhow.
Yeah. Okay. So I just sent it to her. So hopefully I'll hear from her by the end of the day. She'll see that. I'm like, oh.
Oh, Elizabeth Smart? Oh, God. Yeah. What's up? She probably just got it on her computer right now. She probably gets thousands of emails a day. And then when she speaks like that, come on.
Yeah. Oh, I put Semper Fi at the end. See if she needs.
See if she like responds to the did you throw a devil dog in there or something like that? You're not a Semper Fi guy.
Hoorah. I know. I don't use it. I very sparingly.
Hoorah. Some guys use it with everything.
I know, like everything.
And then
so like, when she calls me at the end of the day, I will try and merge the call. So make sure your phone is ready.
Are you kidding me? If you call me at the end of the day, you better have Elizabeth Smart on the phone. Hey, we love you. Like, okay.
Be like, Mac, hey, hang on a second.
Okay, losers, what do you want?
I'll be like, hey, Mac, Elizabeth, are you there? And she'll be like, hey, guys. And then you're going to be like, get the hell out of here.
Oh, I would throw a fit. And for a whole variety of reasons, she's a stud.
Emulates everything that is good in people.
Adversity, hello, right? Adversity. And, you know, and she, you know, she's not going to let the adversity that's come into her life that she didn't deserve or sign up for. She is not going to allow that to define her and any of that. And so it's just, you know, it's really cool to see her, you know, to see what she does. All right. Wait a minute. Explorer news on this date in history. In 1912, English explorer Robert F. Scott and his expedition reached the South Pole only to discover that Rode Amundsen had gotten there first. Shit.
He did?
That would piss you off, right?
That would be a bummer, man.
Yeah.
That's why that doesn't happen today because of cell phones.
Yeah, but, you know, can you imagine you go all that
way? You'd be like setting off and they call you, hey, Mac, what's up?
We're closing.
Jones is already there. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. But then they didn't know that. They had to go there to find that out. They're like, they're getting close. Like, what's that on the ice? Like, I don't know. I can't see. My eyes aren't working again. I think I'm, like, frozen blind. Like, oh, shit. That's what's his face. That idiot got here before we did? What the hell?
Hey, let me check this out. I just read this. These are the other things that pissed me off. This is our ignorance. Today, also in history, in 1778, Captain Cook discovers Hawaii. What? Hawaii was already discovered. There are people living there.
No, you understand. This is the white privilege history.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see.
Hey,
Native people that were living there that were actually having a great life when the white people showed up and brought syphilis and other diseases that killed them off.
Yeah, they got discovered.
Yeah, they got discovered. Oh, hey, congratulations. You're now discovered. Oh, great. Great. I just hated that. Discoverers, like America, I always say that. Like, America was discovered in, what do you mean discovered?
White.
Native American Indians living here.
How about?
They didn't need discovery.
Hey, did you see that story earlier in the week when there was a woman who's a legal analyst on CNN? She appeared on a radio show hosted by a black man. She's a black woman. And in the course of their discussion, she says, well, since you're a white man and experience white privilege, you wouldn't understand it. He says, I'm black.
Oh.
Oops. What? Oh, my God. You know, you can't make it up. And it was live, too. Come on. It was awesome. John Tyler, the 10th president of the United States, died in Richmond, Virginia, on this date at the age of 71 during the American Civil War.
Right.
Let's see. Oliver Hardy was born in Harlem, Georgia. He of Laurel and Hardy, people thought they were funny. I don't know if you watch him a little bit. Not so funny.
Dude, they're hilarious.
What?
Yeah. Oliver Hardy and Stan Laurel?
Yeah.
Freaking genius.
1919. The first landing of an aircraft they were on a ship took place when pilot Eugene B. Ely flew onto the deck of the USS Pennsylvania in San Francisco Harbor. That had to be a ballsy event. What are we going to do? We're going to land this plane on a boat.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
What's the purpose? It hasn't been done yet.
Who are we going to get to do that? Never. Eugene wants to do it. Oh, Eugene, never the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Good luck, Eugene, because your ass is going to need it. Imagine that.
Here's another bullshit from Lewis and Clark. I hate those two guys.
Why?
Well, because, again, here's what they say. Again, history. So it says Lewis was joined by his friend Meriwether. I mean, who names their kid Meriwether? You want to get beat up? Name your kid Meriwether. Meriwether Lewis was joined by his friend William Clark. So Bill.
Right.
Bill Clark.
And Mary.
And 50 others on a journey, including an African American slave and female Indian guide named Sacagawea.
Sacagawea.
So it was because of her that these two people are on the map anyway. Yeah. Meriwether.
Yeah. They didn't die in the mountains of South Dakota and North Dakota. And Montana.
I want to find out who's married. I want to find a Meriwether in real life now.
Holy smoke. On this date, 1904, actor Cary Grant was born in Bristol, England. His real name is Archibald Leach.
Archibald?
Yeah, isn't that the name in The Fish Named Wanda of the goofy brother played by Kevin Kline? Oh, no, the lover.
That's Ken.
Cleese plays the lawyer, right? Isn't he? He's Archibald. I thought he was Archibald.
Archie, yeah.
Archie. Let me just tell you, that movie
is one of my favorites. It's called Kill Me. And then when he's trying to talk about, he's like going to the airport. He's like humming it. Sing. Where did he go? Where did he go, Ken?
Hey, let me tell you, when Kevin Kline comes in, and what he starts speaking Russian, right? And Jamie Lee Curtis is like going into like this sexual thing because he's saying stupid shit in Russia, and then he's smelling his own armpits.
Yeah.
And then he's like, he puts her boot up to his face and he's breathing in and out. If you've never seen A Fish Named Wanda, watch it.
That is the funniest movie
it
ever.
It's hilarious. And if you don't think it's funny, you're stupid, okay?
Well, that's when he calls him, don't call me stupid. I'm not calling you stupid. That would be an insult to all stupid people.
That is.
Oh, man.
That is hilarious.
Kevin Kline is.
He's funny.
Don't call me stupid.
Yeah. I want to play a little. I'm a Seinfeld fan, okay? And I want to play just.
I don't like Jerry Seinfeld. I don't like. He's a pompous ass.
This is not him. This is, if I can find it, This is Frank Costanza, and it's kind of a little bit of a hockey thing, okay? It's a little piece of audio where Frank goes down. Frank is this crazy dad of George Costanza who's neurotic, but Frank is like out of his mind. But he does really funny stuff. He's Ben Stiller's dad, Jerry Stiller, right? And so he has this like the what Festivus, right? He's the king of Festivus, and the Manzier, which is a bra for men. And in this episode, he goes down because George is in trouble at a police station, I found this. I found this, and Elaine. One of the things I think is really funny that Elaine does.
Oh my God.
Hold on. What Elaine does is like she'll fight like George, like, and she'll push Jerry, and they go flying, right? And so this is kind of a hockey thing. If you grew up playing hockey, one of the things that hockey players would say is like, "You want a piece of me? You want to go?" And that means when you say you want to go, that means you're going to drop the gloves and go. And so. It made me laugh yesterday watching this.
Okay, where's my boy?
Oh, my God.
I'm sitting at home reading a periodical, and this is the call I get. My son is a bootlegger.
Ow.
Who put you up to this? Was it her?
All right, wait a minute. I think you've got it backwards.
My George isn't clever enough to hatch a scheme like this.
You got that right.
What the hell does that mean?
That means whatever the hell you want it to mean.
You saying you want a piece of me?
I could drop you like a bag of dirt.
You want a piece of me? You got it!
I don't know why that makes me laugh, but it does. You want to say it to a woman, you want a piece of me? Oh, my God. A little bit of sunshine in my day. The other thing that I saw, I think I saw on Facebook, was people slipping on the ice. Now, why I think that's so funny, I don't know. But, like, when you... Mike's lived in snow country. When you slip on the ice, and not when you
it's
slip...
Funny.
When you slip and fall immediately, but normally what happens is you're like... Woo, 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 and you're fighting it, and then there's a big fiasco, and then, like, you fall into somebody else and knock them down. I don't know why, if you lived in the frozen part of the country, that's funny, but shit, it was hilarious. I sent it to my sons, and they were like, "Dad, that's the funniest thing I've seen in 6 months."
So, yeah.
The on the state in 2011, the first director of the Peace Corps, R. Sergeant Shriver, died at the age of 95. Now, Peace Corps, right? Was founded in by John Kennedy. Maybe the greatest thing the Kennedys have ever done is not the Peace Corps. It is not done by any of the boys. It is the founding of Special Olympics was done by the Kennedys. Eunice Shriver Kennedy founded Special Olympics. And because they had, was it you talking about lobotomies last week?
Yep.
Yeah, they had a sister who had some kind
of lobotomy.
Yeah, and they did a lobotomy on her, and they started Special Olympics. And if you've ever been to Special Olympics event, it is one of the coolest organizations that you'll ever go to. It is way cool, and you always come away better for volunteering.
I was an organizer for the track and field, the sprint or the relay, and also I was a hugger for the guys, so they come back, like, yeah, you pump them up. And they're like, yeah. You know, that's a fantastic, the whole thing is serve. You know, what do you give back? And it's like you said, I work with the CASP program. I work with, you know, the women at church. I do a lot of my time helping others in different categories where I think I can help them with either if it's gun safety or situational awareness or you name it. It's just when you give back your time unselfishly, you know, without being asked, that's the reward. And like I said, that's a huge, you want to feel good, And you know you're doing good things. You right. see it, immediate response.
Right. The cool part to me about doing that is doing it as a family, because you really have cool conversations with your kids about what they see and their thoughts about it. You can see kind of the gears moving in their heads. And you know, and ultimately at the end of the day, you know, my kids have learned awesome lessons, you know, at Special Olympics, which is all they want to be is treated like everybody else. They don't want to be treated any different. And the other thing is how fortunate you are to have everything you have. So even on your worst day, you're pretty damn lucky to have what you have. And I think it's good, you know, I think you should. We all should expose our kids to life and all the different facets of life so they become better people. And my kids love going to Special Olympics. For all the, you know, as Mike said, huggers, right? Right? And you're handing out medals or you're officiating bocce ball or helping out with the food area or something like that. It's just really cool. Just really cool. On this date, 1993, Martin Luther King Jr. holiday was observed in all 50 states for the first time. His birthday was a couple days ago, and it will be celebrated as a federal holiday on Monday. Famous birthdays. Let me see if you know any. We talked about Oliver Hardy.
Right. I'm just, hey, what's the area code for Utah?
997.
So it's not 385?
Danny Kaye was born on this date in 1913, passed away in 1987. If I'm not mistaken, Danny Kaye was part owner of the Seattle Mariners and was a big baseball fan. So anyway.
Really?
All right. Yeah. All right, we're done. What are you doing this weekend? Anything fun?
I told you. I forgot. I will tell you later because I will find that piece of paper that has what I need to do.
Over this weekend and do it?
Like I said, I write it down.
Got it.
And then I forget where I put it. And then I'll find it like 2 days later, and I'm like, shit. Maybe I should start dating my notes too, because then I don't know if it's like a current note.
Yeah, I think let's hope it's not that bad. Normally, when you see the note, it jogs your brain, and you have the aha moment. Oh, that's right.
Not always. Usually, when I look at the note, I'm like,
who wrote this? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
That means we need to look into the reservation.
Who's screwing with me right now?
We're getting close to the institutionalization. We'll come visit, though. I think you should be institutionalized in California. You have a lot of friends here.
I don't. If I am going to be institutionalized, I don't want to be in a state where I know anybody.
When I'm institutionalized, hello?
I don't want to know anybody in that state.
So, if you had to go to a state that you didn't know anybody.
So, it's like all new, like a discovery.
Yeah. If you had to go to a state and you don't know anybody, what state would that be?
To be institutionalized?
Yeah. Maine. No, you know somebody.
No, it's too freaking cold.
So, it would have to be warm? Warm?
No, not humid.
So, dry. New Mexico. Do you know many people in New Mexico?
We have to be northern New Mexico. Yeah, no.
Northern New Mexico is gorgeous, one of the prettiest parts of the country.
And then I would have to, but you know what? That'd be fun, because then I'd be running around with a lab coat, acting like I was a doctor with other patients. Oh, man, I'd have a blast.
Who's that doctor? Oh, he's not a doctor.
That's the gunner.
He's the gunner. Why has he got a lab coat on? It's a long story. We don't want
to
go
into it. This is... Who in the world talks like this, right? The day we look forward to be institutionalized. And then I'm like making a positive note of it, because that's how I live. I always look at things positive. Yeah,
it could be worse. All right.
I'm going to run that place.
I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to run this place. All right. We will talk to you.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Have a good weekend.
I'll talk this weekend, yeah.
There you have it. Michael Musselman on Friday. All right. That'll do it. If you missed the show, Commandant gave me a call on Commandant of the Marine Corps, Robert Neller. Robert B. Neller Give me a call yesterday. Mac, what's going on? Nothing, sir. What's up? It's like, I'm hearing about you. I said, all good, I hope. He said, oddly, yes. So today's a good Friday. Not good Friday, but a great Friday. Because post-traumatic winning is going to go to a lot of places. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank General Furness, because he got a lot of grief for wanting to do that in two areas. One, our friendship, right? Because he and I were friends, that he was putting himself into some kind of ethical situation. And his response was, I'm not. When you see this, you'll understand. I told him he should get all those people to apologize to him publicly. And then other people who said, what are they going to say that's new? Hello. And what he did was he elevated it and the discussion, and now he's sharing it, and it's percolating around the highest levels of the Marine Corps today. So, pretty cool, pretty cool. We will keep you posted. Thank you for listening. And then, you know what? One other thing. Thank you for all the support that everybody out there who's been so encouraging to me, to Mike, what we do. So, so thank you. There's been people that have been listening to this program for a long time that do nothing but encourage me, and I should say thank you, because hopefully this thing is getting ready to going to touch a lot of lives, and if it has the same impact that it had last week, it's going to be a big, wonderful deal as we turn people on to a different way of looking at life, a different way of viewing it, you know, and give them some skills to deal with it. And so there isn't any need to kill yourself, because you can do it. You can do it. If Elizabeth Smart can do it, you can do it. My sister can do it. You can do it. So I love the positive nature of the message. And I thank you to General David Furness for having the steadfastness. I've seen him do it twice and this is one case when, you know, there's a ton of people tell him, don't do this. You shouldn't do this. And now what it's going to do is it's going to be something that has a huge impact and a profound impact on the Marine Corps. The other thing was when we were in Iraq, and he was the commander of 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, and Marines had murdered a guy. And the initial investigation came back that said they all told the same story. It looks good. And he said, I don't believe it. And his steadfastness in that case led to the truth coming out. And the truth was they had planned to go into this guy's house, take him out, and murder him. And we don't do that. And so he's a good friend of mine. But I don't say these things because we're friends. Because I have a lot of other friends that I don't say that about. I say that because he deserves them to be said about him, because of the way he conducts his life. So, thank you to him. Thank you. So, whatever you do, don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues. So, you'll hear me talk a little bit about the Commandant and my conversation with him yesterday, which is always fun because he's a friend. And then, oddly enough, the conversation got kind of, it can always get worse, right? And I talk about, as I've begun to write a script for this, so we can make sure we manage time right and do it right, that, you know, you remember things that happened, and that even in the midst of those horrible events, it seems like every one of them got worse. So, yeah, you have that to look forward to if you're going to hang out and listen. So, have a great weekend. As I said, thank you to everybody who encourages us and listens. this thing called post-traumatic winning is hopefully going to change a lot of people's lives. It already has, and it's been amazing and a very, very cool week here at the tribal headquarters of All Marine Radio. So have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Alex Halling's going to join us on Monday, and he's always entertaining. We haven't talked to him in a few weeks as well, so we'll see you then on a Friday. All Marine Radio, over and out.